Welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, send it to me. Box 13 at greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook. Facebook.com/Radio Detectives. Well, today's episode is brought to you by the financial support of our listeners, and I want to thank Paul so much for his support. We'll send access to the premium site, as we do with all donations of $7 or more. Well, now it's time for us to continue on with this week's Yours Truly Johnny Dollar serial. It's the Long Shot Matter, Parts 3 and Part 4.
From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar.
Lieutenant Barry here.
Oh, hi, Lieutenant.
You're stepping on toes, Johnny boy.
Who's now?
Dr. Victor Palmquist. Here you had a chat with him.
Just how do you chat with a clam?
Whatever it was, he was very unhappy about it.
He called you?
Yeah, very snide, too. Said if we had any more questions, to leave him alone and call his lawyers, and to keep unauthorized people away from him.
Meaning me?
Meaning you.
Well, what's he worried about? You've already got his wife's killer in jail, haven't you?
Everybody buys it but you, Johnny.
You said it before. I'm a hard sale.
Meet me for lunch. I'll try to sell you.
Tonight, and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator...
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. From Special Investigator Johnny Dollar, location Los Angeles, California... to National Underwriters Association, 1180 River Road, Hartford, Connecticut. Assignment, the Long Shot Matter. Expense account continued. Item 3, $1 even. Taxi to the Barclay for lunch with Lieutenant Barry. But let me backtrack for a minute. Coming down in the hotel elevator, I kept thinking over what the lieutenant had said, and I disagreed completely. I wasn't a hard sale. It's just that I wasn't an early sale. There were too many angles to the death of Mrs. Palmquist, too many things I didn't know yet. I got proof of that the minute I stepped outside the hotel. The white cab sedan parked directly across the street contained a real interesting combination of people. Eric Palmquist, the doctor's son, and Steffi Lund, the doctor's nurse. The moment they saw me, they did what every amateur sleuth does. They drove away as fast as possible, thereby becoming just as conspicuous as a second nose. By the time I reached the Barclay, Lieutenant Barry had ordered for both of us.
You don't like it, order something else, but it's the best they got.
Matter of fact, it looks pretty good. Now, as I was saying...
Yeah. So, Palmquist nurse and his kid are an item. You waiting for me to look impressed?
You get up out of the wrong side this morning, Lieutenant.
Look, I don't like the smell of this deal any more than you do, but what does it all add up to? You're sent out here to look into a possible killing.
Which happens.
Victim, Mrs. Palmquist. So, an ex-convict sits in a cell accused of the murder. The accuser and witness, the dead woman's husband. The con insists he's been framed, that the husband is the killer. But the husband is well alibied, bringing it down to the setup known as ex-con versus respected citizen.
You know there's more to it than that.
Don't give me lessons, Johnny. You think you've come up with one thing we don't already know about? I got checkouts going on the doctor, his nurse, his son, everybody within shooting distance of this thing. Don't get any ideas we're asleep down at the hall.
All right. Give me a little fill, huh?
Who?
Palmquist's nurse, Steffi Lund.
Nice kid, never been in trouble. At least we couldn't find any.
What about the boy, Eric Palmquist?
Typical rich doctor's son. Kind of wild, sensitive, gambles, but Papa can afford it. Also hits the booze too much for a kid that young.
What about the doctor's alibi, Laura Considine? Yeah, knew I should have skipped that one. Your eyes look like they're whistling.
Isn't that awful? At my age, too. All right, Johnny, she's clean.
By the way, where does she live?
Has a big house in Long Beach. Why?
No doctors there?
Still a free country. I know people whose doctors live in Paterson, New Jersey.
Point.
Oh, almost forgot. I got the lab report on that anonymous note that started this thing.
Anything?
Untraceable, no prints, cheap paper that can be bought anywhere, and the letters were cut from a dozen different magazines. Didn't tell us a thing.
What do you mean it didn't?
What?
It told us someone was going to try to collect on a policy. We knocked it around a little while longer, getting no place in particular. Then suddenly I was being paged for a telephone call. Barry's raised eyebrows were eloquent. They made me feel like one of those would-be movie stars who have themselves paged in the Brown Derby so that other would-be stars will know they're there. I had a funny notion about who might be calling, so I told the waiter I'd taken in the booth out front and left Lieutenant Barry by himself. Johnny Dollar.
Mr. Dollar, I'm so glad I found you.
Oh?
This is Steffi Lund, Dr. Palmquist's nurse.
Well, the day's picking up.
I'm sorry. I hope I didn't interrupt your lunch. You see, I called your hotel and they told me where you'd gone. I'm sorry.
Well, don't apologize, Steffi. A working girl who drives around in a beautiful white Cadillac doesn't have to, you know.
I'll explain about that.
Why should you owe me any explanation?
Please, Mr. Dollar. I've got to see you right away. It's terribly important. Mr. Dollar.
Where are you?
I'm at Dr. Palmquist's office. Can you come here now, right away?
Okay, I'll be right over.
And please, don't bring anyone along with you, will you?
However you want it, you're calling the shots.
Oh, thank you. And hurry, please.
Expense account item 4, citation for speeding, $25. The carbon copy reads 63 miles per hour in a 35 zone. You ever try to talk an L.A.-type cop out of a ticket? It's ridiculous. He's always a big, good-looking guy who listens seriously while you alibi, but never stops writing. Then he smiles, calls you sir, and hands you the ticket. I couldn't beef about it, though. Two reasons. One, I deserved it. And two, if I hadn't been stopped, I'd never have realized I was being tailed. Because the tail knew what he was doing. A heavy-set, thuggy-looking fellow in a black 51 sedan. He circled the block twice while I was getting the ticket. Was right back on me as I started out again. He was still there as I pulled up in front of Dr. Palmquist's office. But he was smart enough to ride on by without even looking at me. I waited to see if he'd come around the block again. He didn't.
Yes, sir. What is it?
What?
What do you want?
Well, now, that's a switch. When you called me a few minutes ago, you said...
No, you're mistaken. I didn't call you.
Well, now, wait just a minute.
I didn't call you.
Her words were deliberate, emphatic, but her eyes were suddenly doing the real talking, signaling desperately into the room behind her, trying to tell me that she wasn't alone. But I wasn't the only one who caught the signal.
Get away from the door, Steffi. Come in, you.
Did you hear me? I said come in.
Eric, please.
Hello, Eric. What seems to be the trouble around here?
That's far enough.
Oh, now, come on. Why don't you put that thing down? Your family's had enough misery with 38s.
Please, darling, do what he says.
Why did you call him, Steffi? Why?
Because somebody's got to help you because of what you're going through and what it's doing to you. Eric, I can't stand any more of it. You're half out of your mind with fear now. Listen to him, Eric. Maybe he can help.
You think he can help? You think anybody can?
One thing's sure. That gun's not going to help you any. Come on now, kid, put it down.
No. No, because nobody tells me what to do. Not when I've got a gun. They're afraid to. That's right. They're afraid to. You're both afraid, aren't you? It's nice. It's nice for somebody else to be afraid. I like that. I really like that.
He wasn't even looking at us anymore, just somewhere off into space. Somehow, Steffi sensed that I was waiting for a chance to grab his gun and motioned for me not to. And suddenly I remembered where I'd seen that lost, empty look before. Mrs. Palmquist, Eric's mother. She'd had her share of that look the day she died.
Mr. Dollar, help me with him, please.
I picked him up, put him on the couch. He had that terrible whiteness that a deep faint brings, and Steffi didn't waste any time. She loosened his collar, shoved his head forward. In a few minutes, he shuddered once, came to, took a deep breath. We made him comfortable on the couch, but you could see that it had been a rough trip for him. He was conscious, but he didn't have the strength to open his eyes. Steffi just stared at him.
He'll be all right now.
What's wrong with him, Steffi? Why that thing that just happened?
You want the technical name? Circulatory lability. Sound impressive.
Talk layman, huh?
A form of extreme hypertension. Nerves. Enough to make him faint like that from anger, from fear. It's a lovely thing for a man to go through, isn't it?
Well, that calls for a different kind of medicine, doesn't it?
Analysis with a psychiatrist. It's in it now. Only with Eric, it's going to take a long time. Maybe a very long time.
But a kid like that, how? Why?
Fear. Overpowering, petrifying fear.
Of what?
His father.
Of Dr. Palmquist?
Yes. The nice Dr. Palmquist. The gentle, quiet healer. My employer. My father-in-law.
You and Eric are married?
Tijuana, 6 weeks ago. Eric is 25 years old, Mr. Dollar, and he's so afraid of his father, we're still keeping the marriage a secret.
Why, Steffi? Why is he so afraid of Palmquist?
His analyst hasn't been able to get through to that. You expect me to?
Well, somebody better.
Why did you say that?
Because he waved that gun around very convincingly for a scared kid.
He never would have fired. Don't you understand? He's so frightened he couldn't have made himself do it.
I hope you're right. I didn't think it was quite the time to mention one small fact. That if Eric Palmquist was incapable of pulling a trigger, it might turn out to be a very good thing for him. As the sole beneficiary of his mother's will, he would soon have $100,000 in a nice, tidy lump. And if he really was afraid of his father, a piece of money like that could take him a long, long way from the parental fold. In fact, no matter which way you turned, you couldn't get away from the logic that Eric Palmquist might be regarded by some parties as a first-class suspect in the death of his mother. Steffi was still pretty much upset when I finally left her, and I must admit that my own mind wasn't exactly at ease. Hoping that the fresh air would help to clear my thoughts, I took my time driving back, and it must have been nearly an hour later when I pulled into the subterranean garage of my hotel. I guess I was thinking too hard about what had just happened. In any case, I wasn't quick enough. Just as I passed one of the garage's big concrete pillars, a figure stepped out from behind it, brought the business end of a Colt banging down on my head. The ground climbed up and got me. But not before I had a look at him. My heavy-set, thuggy-looking friend who tailed me earlier in the day. He could talk, too.
You're in the wrong town, punk. Take the hint.
I took the hint. I passed out. Johnny Dollar.
Oh, this is Dr. Van Clauser returning your call, Mr. Dollar.
Oh, yes, doctor.
May I ask who recommended me?
I inquired about a good psychiatrist and it came up you.
Yes. Well, the first step is usually an office appointment for a preliminary chat.
That's what I had in mind. Today?
My schedule is quite full. Would tomorrow be suitable?
Today would be better.
Oh, I see. But there should be ample time.
Should be ample time, but there isn't. In fact, I'm running out of it fast.
Very well. 11 o'clock.
Dust off your couch. From Special Investigator Johnny Dollar, location Los Angeles, California. To National Underwriters Association, 1180 River Road, Hartford, Connecticut. Assignment, the long shot matter. Johnny Dollar, hypochondriac, complete with assorted medical advisors. I needed one of them before I even got down to the lobby of my hotel. It was the house medic, that's item five, $5, who'd patched me up yesterday after a thug had worked me over in the hotel garage. Now came checkup time, and the doctor was a fusser, and he disapproved of me.
Hold still now, hold still.
Yeah, but that's my head you're digging into.
I wouldn't have to if somebody else hadn't split it open. There.
Hey.
Well, looks a little better.
Yeah, well, don't sound so enthusiastic.
Walking into a wall.
It's the best I could think of at the moment.
Likely story. Hold still now. I want to redress that wound on the other side. Hold still.
Temper, temper. Funny, He was working on the outside of my head, but it was the inside that ached most. There were reasons, lots of them. Like the murder of a sick old woman the same day I'd arrived, and the anonymous note that had warned of it. Like the victim's husband and an ex-convict accusing each other of committing the crime. It was a rough one, real rough, because the picture kept changing from minute to minute, and my company was on the hook for $100,000. At 11 o'clock, I sat across the desk from Dr. Hans von Clauser, psychiatrist in his Beverly Hills office. He was small, spectacled, and charmingly Viennese. More important, he was the analyst who was treating Eric Palmquist, the murdered woman's son.
Now, Mr. Dollar.
Afraid I owe you an apology, Doctor. I deceived you a little bit. I'm not exactly here as a patient. Oh,
everyone finds it difficult to begin, Mr. Dollar. Suppose we hear some of the medical history first.
Huh? I tell you, we're off on the wrong foot, Doctor, and it's my fault. Here, take a look at these, my credentials.
I see, then you're hardly here as a patient.
About a patient, let's say.
My dear Mr. Dollar, I think you know very well that I can reveal nothing which is told to me in this room.
I know that.
Then the purpose of this visit?
I just want answers from a competent authority about a certain illness. I won't bring personalities into it. It's important, Doctor.
And the particular illness?
Something called circulatory lability.
You know that it's a form of extremely provoked hypertension?
Yeah, that much I do.
Hypertension is the result of anxieties. The anxieties may be real or fancied, but the hypertension is very genuine indeed and very dangerous.
Dangerous to the extent that a man could turn to violence, maybe kill?
If sufficiently aroused, yes, it has happened.
I see. Thank you. Thank you very much. Item 7, 10 cents, recklessly squandered on a phone call to my hotel to check for messages. There was one. Lieutenant Berry of the L.A. Police Department would like to see me at my convenience. Would I? I would. You get practically nowhere ignoring police lieutenants. He stared at the bandage on my head and my assorted cuts and bruises, and his opening line was quite inspired.
Oh, what happened to you?
Somebody was pretty fast with a gun barrel last night.
Where'd it happen?
Garage, under my hotel. It seems he didn't like my being in town.
You get a look at him?
Enough.
Want to go through the mug book?
No, I'll catch up with him someday. Besides, whoever was paying him is the interesting one.
Have it your own way.
Well, now, you didn't call me all the way down here for laughs, Lieutenant. Anything special on your mind?
Lonnie Miller, the guy we got sitting in cell number 8A, the prowler who shot Mrs. Palmquist.
So Dr. Palmquist insists.
He isn't the only one, Johnny, not anymore.
What?
Yeah. We finally traced the murder weapon. It was bought at a pawn shop in Burbank. The pawnbroker positively identified a mugshot of the buyer, Lonnie Miller.
Police identification evidence is a pretty tough thing to ignore. But I was still what the lieutenant called a hard sale. It wasn't stubbornness, simply the fact that I'm very large for motivation. It can be as wild, as woolly as they come, but it's got to be there somewhere. And somehow, with so many good ones around, the worn, faded man in cell 8A didn't rate in that company. I asked the lieutenant for a couple of minutes with Lonnie Miller. He shook his head as though he felt sorry for me, but okayed the visit anyway. Miller?
You're angry about something, Mr. Dollar. I can tell. It's in your face.
Yeah. About a story you told me the other day. About Dr. Palmquist giving you a lift, keeping you around town, then using you as a patsy so he could kill his wife. You want to change any of it?
You're asking if I lied, mister? Is that it?
That's it.
It's figured to be like this sooner or later. Goodbye, mister.
Come on, Miller. Talk to me.
Lie? I think I'd lie to the only man who even looked like he believed me.
You still haven't answered.
Mister, don't you think I know I haven't got a chance? That I'm dead? I don't even care anymore. But I didn't lie. Not one word.
A Burbank pawnbroker says you did, says you bought the murder gun from him.
I've never even been in Burbank, I swear to you. How could I have bought the gun?
He identified a picture of you, says you showed your driver's license as identification. Where is your license, Miller?
In my wallet, downstairs. They took everything when they booked me. Mr. Dollar?
Tell it to me all over again, Miller, from the minute Dr. Palmquist gave you the lift, step by step, every single detail. Tell it to me. He began slowly, haltingly. The words just kind of fell out of his mouth in a tired, hopeless fashion. It was the same story he told so many times now. I had reason for making him go through it, some small, hazy idea that was tugging at the back of my brain, jagged, undeveloped, but an idea. When I left the cell, I had Miller's permission to look in his wallet. The police custodian showed it to me 5 minutes after that. The license wasn't there. Expense account item 8, 10 cents, an L.A. newspaper, 3 days old. One which played up the Palmquist killing big, contained pictures of both Dr. Palmquist, grieving husband, and Lonnie Miller, suspected killer. Purpose? To be used in backtracking. The drive down to Long Beach could have been pleasant. Sun, ocean, a relaxing type day, but not for me. Not with what was going on inside my head. Even the soft breeze coming in off the Pacific couldn't sweep the pieces together for me. Sure, for a few seconds, everything would make sense. Then, a moment later, some small fact would make the whole theory collapse. I knew one thing, though. If this whole deal was a frame, it was a great one, a work of art, something to be admired. Provided your name was neither Lonnie Miller or National Underwriters. About 6 miles this side of Long Beach, I found what I was looking for, the little tacos joint where Miller claimed he and Dr. Palmquist had stopped for coffee.
Hola, amigo. You like some tacos?
Sure.
Sit down. It won't be a minute.
Owner around?
You're looking at him, amigo. Irving Gonzalez, owner.
Irving?
Sure. I had it changed. Nobody could pronounce Plutarco Gonzalez.
See your point.
It doesn't pay to make problems for your customers in business.
Yeah.
When are you going to work up to asking the questions, amigo?
Well,
I can make tacos blindfolded and I can tell a cop the same way.
Well, you're not too far wrong. Want to take a look at this newspaper? Either of these men ever been in here?
Dr. Victor Palmquist, Lonnie Miller. Oh, I read about that killing. Very interesting.
Yeah. Well, what about it, Irving?
What about what?
These men. Have they ever been in here, alone, together, any time?
Yes, I mean, they look kind of familiar, but maybe it's only because I see them in the papers. You know,
is that the best you can do?
Well, look, amigo, you stand behind a counter all day and everybody looks like everybody else. You wouldn't want me to make a guess, and that's all I'd be doing, guessing.
No, I wouldn't want that.
Here, nice and hot. Eat your tacos, amigo.
Thanks anyway. I'll skip them this time. Here.
You know something? I don't blame you. Hey, look at this. Pills.
Pills?
Pills. I eat them by the dozen. You know why, amigo? Tacos.
There's this about the racket. You try, you strike out, you can't waste time thinking about it. You get on to the next step. The step? Laura Considine, Dr. Palmquist's lovely alibi the night of his wife's death. Her house was only a few miles out of Long Beach. It seemed logical to head for it. I reached it about 20 minutes later, a large, old-fashioned, and seemingly deserted house in a promontory that jutted out into the Pacific. Strikeout number two. The hostile iron fence that circled it made its point. Keep out. So I did. Trespassing applies to everyone. From where I stood, I couldn't identify the car that suddenly roared away from the back of the house, but one thing was obvious. The driver was in a hurry, and I was getting nowhere. I decided to head back to town. It happened 5 minutes later as I rounded a curve on my way back to the Pacific Coast Highway. Choice! The Pacific on one side, granite cliffs on the other. I picked the cliffs! Funny what your mind does at moments like that. I remember looking at the mashed inside of the car and wondering which company carried the insurance policy. Then I thought of how good a marksman a man must be to pick off a tire from any of those cliffs. And then I remembered still another thing. Hadn't I been told about someone who was a great shot, who made it a rule to hunt 2 months out of the year, no matter how busy he was? Sure. a highly respected citizen named Dr. Victor Palmquist.
Now here's our star to tell you about the final exciting episode of this week's story.
Tomorrow, you want to hide something? Put it in plain view. Only don't go overboard on the system if you're hiding a murder. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood. Written by Tony Barrett. It is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Be sure to join us tomorrow night, same time and station, for the next exciting episode of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. Roy Rowan speaking.
Welcome back. Well, I love that he schedules an appointment with a psychiatrist to ask one question he probably could have gone to the library and looked up. Maybe I'm being biased by our information age, but that was a little odd. I have to say that I'm pretty pleased with the direction this particular episode is taking. I was really thinking that this was not going to be very interesting based on the first two parts, but they put in quite a few little wrinkles, and now it'll be a challenge to wrap everything up in part five. So, good show so far. All right, listener comments and feedback. Bob comments on over on the website, "My wife loves you. I've always traveled extensively through our 27 years of marriage and fell into the bad habit of having the TV on at night to drown out motel noises so I could sleep. That translated to not being able to fall asleep at home without the TV on, a major contention with my fine wife. Since I found your website and can download Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, I put my headset on and 5 minutes later I'm sawing logs. All the episodes ought to last me for decades. I'll be sending a donation next week for your website. Keep up the good work and thank you for all that you do." Well, thanks so much, Bob, and glad to contribute to domestic tranquility. And we have a review over in the Amazon App Store for Marbury Fagan. She writes, "I have had this app on my iPhone for a couple years. After switching last week to an Android, it was one of the first apps I loaded on my new phone." Well, thanks so much. I appreciate that, particularly the cross-platform loyalty. And if you do have an Android, we're not in the Google Android App Store, but if you download the Amazon App Store, you're able to go ahead and access the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio. Always consistently a high seller over there. We're currently, as of this recording, number 5 in the podcast category of apps on Amazon. So very gratified by that, and thanks to everyone who's purchased the app there. All right, well, that will do it for today. We'll be back tomorrow with Nick Carter, and then join us back here on Friday as we wrap up the long shot matter. In the meantime, send your comments to Box 13 at greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/Radio Detectives. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.